Welcome to Talking to the Professors at Austin Health.
Hello, welcome to the Austin Hospitals podcast series. I'm Professor Jeffrey Zajac. I'm head of the Division of Medicine here at the Austin and Professor of Medicine at the University of Melbourne. I'd like to introduce Professor Peter Angus, who is head of the Department of Gastroenterology and Hepatology and Medical Director of the Liver Transplant Unit here at the Austin. Welcome, Peter.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
You treat patients with liver disease, but I expect most people don't even know what the liver does.
Well, the liver has a whole lot of incredibly important functions that we don't see. It's very important in cleansing the blood, removing toxins from the blood. It also has a very important role in making things. So most of the important things that make up body tissues like muscle and fat have to be made by the liver. And so when your liver's not working, all of these functions can fail.
So if it stopped working today, what would happen?
Well, we see this quite commonly in patients with severe hepatitis and other very serious liver problems. And nothing happens immediately, but over a period of days, patients start to get increasingly sick. They go yellow, they become drowsy. And because we don't have a machine that can support liver function, eventually people will die within a few days of their liver failing.
So liver disease is quite common in our community, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's becoming increasingly common. There are two main reasons. There is a huge increase in the prevalence of chronic viral hepatitis, hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And the other very important problem that people are only just becoming aware of is fatty liver disease. So we know of all the problems relating to the epidemic of obesity and diabetes, but one of the problems associated with this that we haven't really fully recognised is the development of fatty liver disease, which can go on to cause cirrhosis of the liver.
And how would you know if you had a fatty liver?
Well, if you've got poorly controlled diabetes or you're very obese, you will have fatty liver, almost certainly.
And are there tests that could confirm the diagnosis?
Yes, so your doctor can identify this really quite readily through blood tests and also an ultrasound examination of the liver.
So if someone has liver disease, what would they notice that would take them to the doctor?
One of the problems is, I mentioned before, that it's quite difficult for people to understand what their livers do for them day to day because most of the functions aren't seen. And it's the same with chronic liver disease. Many patients really won't know they've got the problem until they're quite sick. And this is certainly true of people who are carrying, for example, viral hepatitis.
So if people are unwell and the doctor does the appropriate blood tests and diagnoses liver disease, how would you go about investigating and treating that?
Well, one of the most important things, the simple thing, is to just find out a bit more about the patient. So often we can identify why someone's got liver trouble from simply finding out about their lifestyle, risk factors for exposure to hepatitis, their alcohol intake and so on. So often we get very obvious clues from just finding out a little bit about their lifestyle.
So let's say you have blood tests and x-rays and find out you have liver disease. Are there treatments available?
Yeah, one of the most exciting things throughout my career has been the huge developments in the treatments of liver disease. So in Australia, viral hepatitis is clearly now the most important cause of serious liver disease and liver cancer. And over the last decade or so, we've developed very effective antiviral therapies that can control hepatitis or even cure it in most of the patients that we see.
So does the medication make the virus go away?
It's different for the different forms of chronic viral hepatitis. The important ones are hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And most people we see with chronic hepatitis B have had it for many years, and it's very difficult to cure it completely. But the drugs can completely suppress the virus so it stops causing damage.
So if you have this illness and you have appropriate treatment, your liver will be stable or perhaps even improve?
The liver will be stabilised, and we know if you've got even quite serious scarring of the liver, once you stop the damage caused by the virus, by stopping the virus from growing, the liver can actually improve, the scarring can resolve.
Well, let's say the liver disease progresses to a stage where the liver is badly damaged. What can be done for those people?
Well, there are a number of very important principles. The first is to avoid other things that can make disease worse. So you might have bad liver disease due to viral hepatitis, for example, but making sure you don't drink too much alcohol, making sure you don't develop diabetes or become overweight, making sure you don't catch other viruses that might make your liver disease worse, these are very important things. A good diet, careful follow-up. We know that people with very severe liver disease can get liver cancer, so we screen these patients to pick up cancer at an early stage where it can be cured.
And let's say none of that works and the liver disease is still progressing.
We don't have a machine to support the liver. If your liver fails, then you need a liver transplant. And this, of course, is one of the main activities here at the Austin. So liver transplantation is the safety net for patients who develop end-stage liver failure, despite our best efforts, for whom there's nothing else we can do.
Now, if you find the liver for a person and it gets transplanted into the patient, there must be a lot of things that could go wrong with that process.
Yeah, it's a very complex process. The surgery is very difficult. Liver transplantation is the most difficult of all the transplant operations. But on the other hand, once someone has a successful liver transplant, the long-term results are outstanding. So the long-term survival of liver transplants is better than for any other organs.
Do you know why that is?
It's probably mainly because the liver has two unique properties. Firstly, it's a very big organ, and because of that, it seems more resistant to rejection. The other thing that people are probably aware of is that the liver is the only organ in the body that can regenerate itself. So even if it gets some damage, as long as you stop the damage, the liver cells can regenerate again and again. So as opposed to, for example, a kidney, where if you lose kidney function, it's very hard to get it back.
Do you need a whole liver?
No, you don't. So an important part of our program here is doing what we call split liver transplantation. And in that procedure, we can take 2/3 of a donor liver for an adult and use the other third for a child. So most of the children who are transplanted are actually receiving small portions of an adult liver.
So in terms of transplantation, what do you see as the way forward in the next few years if there's not enough livers for all the people who need them?
Well, I think that we can do much better in obtaining more organs. The government's put in an enormous amount of effort to try and improve our organ donation systems, to encourage hospitals to find organ donors. And of course, the public needs to understand that if they want transplantation to be available, because it is a fantastic therapy for people who are otherwise untreatable, then it's a society problem. We all need to be working together to try and improve organ donation rates. And I'm very optimistic that we can. Here at the Austin, we continue to work on new ways of better utilising organs. We're using organs that we wouldn't have used in the past because we were worried that they perhaps weren't suitable, but we've got better at working with these so-called marginal organs. The split liver transplantation is obviously helping the problem as well. And there's another form of organ donation that we also are working on, and that is obtaining donor livers from patients who've not necessarily died of brain death but died of other causes. This is much more difficult, but it is an area that can potentially be another source of donor organs.
Now, with kidneys, sometimes you can have a donation from a living donor. Is that possible with liver transplantation?
It is. It's something that has been pursued in other countries, and it's been done a few times in Australia. And in an extreme situation, we might contemplate it, for example, for a child, where the parent might donate part of their liver. But for an adult, it's a much more controversial area, because what it involves is a very big operation on the donor and significant risks to the donor. It's an area of ongoing debate.
Given that we've been talking about chronic liver disease and cirrhosis, the problem here is that there's scarring and fibrosis of the liver tissue. Is there anything that can be done about that?
That is the key problem. So we know that the liver can regenerate itself, which is great. With chronic diseases of other organs, this isn't possible, so you just gradually lose function. But the liver can regenerate in response to damage. But the big problem is that the liver scars, and when it's scarred, its function is impaired. So we're working on a number of different approaches to slow down this scarring and perhaps even reverse this scarring process.
And is it fair to say that medication for blocking the scarring is still a fair way off?
No, I think major advances have been made in the last few years. We know that simple things like some of the hormone systems that control blood pressure, they have a major role in tissue scarring, and we've got drugs that can block those systems. And this is one of the things that we're working on at the moment.
So it may well be in the medium term that there might be medication available to stop this chronic liver failure?
Yeah, there are a number of different compounds in early phase trials at the moment, including here at the Austin.
Well, I think on that positive note we should stop, and thank you for coming today, Peter.
Thanks, Geoffrey.
That was Talking with the Professors at Austin Health.